I appreciate you all being here tonight and your faithfulness. We're going to be looking at the book of Hosea tonight. And the Lord is faithful to bring to us that which He would have us to see. In many ways, I feel inadequate to these prophetic books. But I know who is adequate. And I know that He will be faithful to give us exactly what we need and to make what might begin as information to be revelation to us, so that it can lodge in our hearts and come to life as we need it. I want to look at, for just a minute, the introduction that we have here in the study guide, which begins on page 24. Let's start there. And we find as we look there that the name Hosea literally means salvation. And if you study, you'll find that his name, the root of his name, is the same as the name Jesus and also Joshua in the scriptures. So think about salvation when we think about this book. You know, if I had to put this book into one phrase, I guess I'd say in studying it and beginning to understand it, it's a book about one-sided love. It's a one-sided love affair. It's what this book is about. And we see it in two different dimensions, which I think are just, it's so unique the way this book is written. It's so unique the ministry that God gave Hosea and the things that were required of him in order to fulfill that ministry. But it's a story of one-sided love because Hosea is instructed to marry a prostitute, and we'll look at this as we read in chapter 1, and it says that he did as the Lord said. Now you think about that just to begin with, man of God, mouthpiece of the Lord to the northern kingdom. He's the prophet to the northern kingdom of Israel. You remember that was, remember we had the chart up here when we were studying Ezekiel? We had the northern kingdom and there were 10 tribes, and they're called Israel, and their capital Samaria. And then we had the southern kingdom, and they're called Judah, the tribe of Judah and Benjamin, but they're called by the name of the larger tribe, Judah. Same was true with the northern kingdom. When we see in the scriptures as we study this book, sometimes the Lord calls them Ephraim, which is the name of the largest tribe. So Ephraim is the northern kingdom or Israel. And then, of course, the capital of the southern kingdom of Judah was Jerusalem. And do you remember the night that we drew up here and we had the two sister cities? And there was such an analogy of how they were the Lord's. He said, "You were mine." And they had the names. One was the older sister and one was the younger sister. And we found that the older sister set her heart. You remember we drew that arrow toward the north, toward Assyria, as her lover, seeking allies with that lover. And that eventually the Lord turned her over to that lover. And that her younger sister in the southern kingdom, Jerusalem, who should have learned from what happened to her older sister, some 100 years later or a little over that, did the very same thing. In fact, he said she sinned worse because knowing what had happened to her sister, rather than turning and repenting and returning to the Lord, coming back to the Lord, she chose not only Assyria as her lover, but remember it said she went after the royal-looking Chaldeans and the Babylonians. And eventually the Lord said, "I'll stir your lovers up against you. It's what I'll do." And she went into captivity too. So both Samaria and Israel went to the Assyrians. And then Jerusalem, Judah went to the Babylonians. Both sisters, so to speak, had adulterous hearts, went seeking the gods of other nations, and eventually that became their destruction. Well, that same historical, I'm going to say story or pattern, we'll be looking at again tonight, just through the eyes of another prophet who prophesied to the northern kingdom. And at the same time that he was prophesying to the northern kingdom, the prophet Isaiah is prophesying to the southern kingdom. And we'll see some of his contemporaries listed here in our study guide. But as I said, it's the story of one-sided love. And we can look at the love that Hosea has for his wife, Gomer, who is a prostitute. even in her unfaithfulness, he loves her. And we can see the love that God has for Israel all the way through those stages of her unfaithfulness. And then we can even apply it to another dimension and realize that, you know what, we're involved in a one-sided love affair too, because we're not perfect and we fail him every day somehow, some way. Except that we can keep our hearts toward him, even though our acts may not be perfect. Our hearts can be perfect toward him, turned toward him. But we fail him. We're not the perfect love that he is. And it's a one-sided love affair all the way through. But we can look at a picture of this and see like a physical portrayal of the love that Hosea shows toward Gomer. And then the pain, the agony that he suffers because of her unfaithfulness and her betrayal. Then we can apply that over to a spiritual level and see the love that God had toward Israel, still has. Still he loves her and promises to restore. So I know that nation will be restored one day, because God says at the very end of this book, in fact, I'll restore you. I'll bring you. You'll come back to me. And when you do, I'll restore you and you'll be fruitful again. So I know that'll happen. But the sin of Israel parallels the adultery of Gomer. So we can look at it on that level. Then we can look at ourselves. God's holy and he loves us. We're not, except in him. And still he loves us. And then the decline, as Gomer goes after her lover, she falls into a state of decay from the inside out. Her heart's not true. Well, the same thing happens with the nation of Israel. And when she's, beckoned to return, Israel refuses to come home. She won't come back to the Lord. In fact, she becomes very arrogant and stiff-necked against the Lord. And that is, that's what causes the final verdict that we'll see some chapters over as we study the book. And then the fact that there is a redemption. Gomer is bought back out of the slave market, which is where she ends up. And we know that sin is bondage to us too. We end up in the slave market. The same way Israel will be restored. And in all of this, we see attributes of a loving God. And that is that, in spite of our sin, he is holy. In spite of our degradation, he judges when we rebel, but he's just in his judgment. And then in spite of all of that, he is loving and gracious. Mercy is his name. Mercy is what he really desires above all else, that we be whole and that we be restored. And we can see all of this in the book of Hosea. So there's a parallel that runs here, or an analogy that runs from a physical example to a spiritual example, to one that we can apply to our lives right now. And it's not a history lesson, although the history is the background for it. But it's a life lesson of a one-sided love affair and how the Lord loves us. We'll see that in this book. So Hosea means salvation. We learned that Hosea was a contemporary of some prophets that we recognize by name, Amos, the prophet Isaiah, whom we've already studied, who was operating in his ministry to the southern kingdom at the same time that Hosea was operating in his ministry to the northern kingdom. Then Jonah and Oded. There's not a book about Oded, but his name is mentioned as a prophet. And then, of course, Micah. And those are all prophets that we'll study in the days ahead. They're coming up. Now, Hosea is commanded by God to marry a prostitute. And his marriage is used, as we said, to convey a message to Israel of God's love for her in spite of her unfaithfulness. But think about the fact that he was told to marry a prostitute. I mean, how would that go down in our church? Man of God says, writes it, records it, God told me to marry a prostitute. What do you think? You know who he married?
I
think he would be very unacceptable, and I think they'd probably be the talk of the town, so to speak. Should be the talk of the town, but unfortunately, lots of times, it's the talk of the congregation, isn't it? You know, he says he's a man of God, claims to be a man of God. I thought he was a man of God, but you know who he married? You know who he's married to? He says God told him to do that. We would struggle with that, wouldn't we? Mm-hmm. And if we were wise, we'd keep our mouths shut. Well, there are three children who are born in this situation, and they're given names that are prophetic, and we will look at all of those in chapter 1. And then we're told that the book of Hosea is written in the form of an analogy, which compares one thing to another. And this analogy is the husband-wife relationship, and it's conveying the message of God's love for the nation of Israel. He is her husband, she is his wife, they're betrothed, and yet she's unfaithful. Now, chapter 1 reveals the time period in which Hosea prophesied, and tells of his marriage to the prostitute, and it names the children that are going to be born, and it concludes with a statement concerning Israel and Judah. So we'll look at this. Basically, this explains the theme of this book, which is Israel's unfaithfulness as contrasted to God's faithfulness. So let's look at chapter 1, and then we'll come back to our outline as we go chapter by chapter. Hosea chapter 1. The word of the Lord that came to Hosea, the son of Beeri, in the days of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah, and in the days of Jeroboam, the son of Joash, king of Israel. So that sets us in a particular time period, and that's how we can know that he was a contemporary of the prophets that we mentioned earlier. So we know that the messenger is Hosea, and we are going to learn that his message is to the nation of Israel, and that the message is that salvation, which is what his name means, Hosea means, is available if the nation will turn from its idolatrous ways back to the Lord. That's his message. If you'll turn back, if you'll come back to the Lord, then salvation is yours through him. When the Lord began to speak to Hosea, to speak by Hosea, the Lord said to Hosea, "Go, take yourself a wife of harlotry and children of harlotry. For the land has committed great harlotry by departing from the Lord." Now, harlotry here is spiritual adultery, and we've talked about this several times already. But think about that assignment. You know, we've looked at each prophet and the call that was put upon his life. Think about Hosea. There were some unusual things required of these most unusual men, weren't there? God said to him, "I want you to go take yourself a wife of harlotry. Go marry yourself a prostitute, and I want fruit produced out of that union. Or I want children to come into your life with her, and they're going to be children of harlotry." Now, there's a reason for that, and God tells them what it is. There's a parallel. The land has committed harlotry, and in your domestic situation, I am going to show Israel the picture of herself. So he went and took Gomer, the daughter of Diblaim, and she conceived and bore him a son. Then the Lord said to him, "Call his name Jezreel." And that literally means God scatters. "For in a little while, I will avenge the bloodshed of Jezreel on the house of Jehu and bring an end to the kingdom of the house of Israel." Now, if we went back to 2 Kings, when we studied that book, around chapters 15 and 16, you remember King Ahab and his wife, Jezebel. And do you remember that the king coveted a vineyard that belonged to a man named Naboth?
Yeah.
and he couldn't have it. The man refused to sell it. So he was moaning and groaning about not having what he wanted, and his wife Jezebel said, "And you're the king. Let me show you how to get what you want." And she set the man up, remember, and had him slain, and then his vineyard came to their kingdom. They took the man's inheritance and had him killed on false accusations is what they did. Well, that happened in Jezreel. Naboth was their neighbor. And do you also remember when Jehu was given the assignment to come and to put an end to Jezebel? And that he came riding up and came to the city of Jezreel. And that's where the palace was, and that she was up in the window, remember? And the eunuchs threw her down. And it said that her face, her hands, and her feet were all that remained, or her skull, her hands, and her feet were all that remained after the dogs had finished with her in the streets of Jezreel. Well, Jehu was the man who was responsible for her end. And yet, later on, as we read, some of the same sins that had plagued the kingdom under Ahab's reign became part of Jehu's life as well. So there was a score to settle, might be the way that I could put it. And so when it talks about bringing an end to the kingdom of the house of Israel and avenging the bloodshed of Jezreel, really the bottom line of all of that, and there are a lot of details that I'm leaving out, is adultery, spiritual adultery. Because who was it that Jezebel took care of at her table, the scripture says? She fed and looked after the prophets of Baal. So right there they were in the midst of God's people, prophets of Baal. And you remember the showdown finally between the prophets of Baal and Elijah, remember? So man of God on the scene, but still there was idol worship right in the heart of God's people. And you remember when we studied the book of Ezekiel, I believe it was, it said that from the time they came out of Egypt, they had never set their hearts, you know, wholly on the Lord, but they had brought that with them in their hearts, even coming out of the bondage of the land of Egypt. They brought those idols with them. If not tangibly, they brought them in their hearts. And Israel was never void of those idols. And here we see just more of the same type of thing going on. So this connects to a whole lot of what we've already studied about the nation and the reason for its downfall. Now, we're in chapter 1, and we're now in verse 5 of Hosea, chapter 1. "It shall come to pass in that day," and this is the Lord speaking to Hosea, "that I will break the bow of Israel in the valley of Jezreel. And she conceived again," this is Gomer, "and bore a daughter. Then God said to him," to Hosea, "call her name Lo-Ruhamah, which means not pitied," or there will be no mercy or no compassion here. "For I will no longer have mercy on the house of Israel, but I will utterly take them away." So the first child, and Jezreel literally means God will sow or God will scatter. I think I told you that. Meaning that there was going to come a time when God would scatter the nation of Israel. He would disperse them among many nations. Remember this? God did scatter them, didn't he? And then he says here, "There'll come a time when I will utterly take them away. There will be no mercy. They'll come to a point where they will receive my judgment. And there will be no pity and there will be no mercy. And they will be destroyed." And you remember that the land of Israel was literally wiped out, wasn't it? The nation of Israel, except for the ones who clung to Judah and David's, you know, the people who had set themselves under David's reign. Though some of that portion were spared. But God scattered and destroyed the nation of Israel. or the kingdom of Israel. And he says in verse 7, "Yet I will have mercy on the house of Judah." And because of his covenant with David, God always showed mercy to the house of Judah, didn't he? "I will save them by the Lord their God, and will not save them by bow, nor by sword or battle, or by horses or horsemen." In other words, God said it's not going to be a physical sparing that goes on here. "But the remnant that is saved will be saved by my hand." Do you remember? Do you remember God saying that? Do you remember when Assyria thought that while it was taking Israel, it would just go on down and take Jerusalem? And God said he protected that city and it would not fall to Assyria. He would give it into the hands of Babylon. But even at that he would save a remnant, remember? That's because of his covenant with David. And the fact that there are any Hebrews on the earth today and that there is an Israel is because of his covenant with another man who's the father of that nation. And his name is Abraham. And God said, your seed will endure, period. And there'll be as many of them as the sands of the sea and the stars of the heavens. And God keeps his word. Now, when she, verse 8, had weaned Lo-Ruhama, she conceived and bore a son. So this is a son, a daughter, and another son. Then God said, call his name Lo-Ammi, which means, literally, not my people. We're in Hosea chapter 1, verse 9. Not my people. For you are not my people, and I will not be your God. So there will come a point in the history of Israel where God will say, I don't even know you. And he will, for a time, reject, you're not even mine, and I'm not even yours. He'll reject Israel. But we know the end of the story too, don't we? Because God is full of mercy. And he never wants for the course to go this way. How far we are removed from the Lord is not determined by him, is it? That's our choice. And as it was their choice, it was Gomer's choice to leave Hosea and to go as far as she went. That was her choice. He loved her unconditionally. He loved her anyway. Remember, it's a one-sided love story, we said, just like our story is with the one who loves us unconditionally, and that is Jesus. Verse 10, yet the number of the children of Israel, well look, we were just talking about this, shall be as the sand of the sea. In spite of the coming judgment, and in spite of the destruction and the devastation that I will pour out on this nation, still they will multiply, he says. Why is that? How can that be? Because of what he promised Abraham back in the book of Genesis, we read it. That his covenant with Abraham would be an everlasting covenant. What did he promise David? That his seed will sit on the throne forever. That's right, that an eternal ruler out of the seed of David. The mercy and the faithfulness of God is amazing, isn't it? And that, of course, is Jesus.
There wouldn't have been a gap between David and his descendants on up to Jesus Christ if Solomon hadn't broke the covenant.
Had their hearts remained true to the Lord. That's right, because that's what God says. Yeah. All right, so verse 10 of chapter 1, yet the number of the children of Israel shall be as the sand of the sea, which cannot be measured or numbered. And it shall come to pass in the place where it was said to them, you are not my people. There it shall be said to them, you are sons of the living God. So you see the heart of restoration that's here. It's not God's heart to say you're not my people. That's our choice. We either love him or we don't. Then the children of Judah and the children of Israel shall be gathered together and appoint for themselves one head. There's going to be a reuniting of that nation that was divided, isn't there? And they shall come up out of the land into which they've been scattered, for great will be the day of Jezreel. Now let's look back at some things for just a minute. We're going to find that this book is a very compassionate book, because the passion that Hosea feels in his domestic situation, he goes through so much because he loves this woman and she betrays him, that he has a feeling of the kind of grief that it causes God when Israel betrays him. So he uses this man and his compassionate heart toward this unfaithful wife to show a picture of his compassionate heart to the nation of Israel and to woo her back to himself, if she'll only come. And it's the same thing that Hosea goes through. So his domestic life becomes an analogy of Israel's unfaithfulness to God. And even when, in the chapters where we read about the judgment that's coming, you can tell as you read those passages, they're tempered. There's a tenderness that's there all along. And it's not judgment without mercy, because it was never that way for Hosea toward his wife, toward this woman that he loved. So let's look at chapter 2. Now, remember that this is an analogy. And chapter 2 is a metaphor. And it speaks of Israel's unfaithfulness to God and the punishment that comes for that unfaithfulness. And still it mentions Israel's restoration. So let's remember as we read this that it's not addressed to the woman, but it's addressed to the nation. And it begins like this, chapter 2 of Hosea. Say to your brethren, my people, and to your sisters, mercy is shown. Bring charges against your mother, bring charges. For she is not my wife, nor am I her husband. There's the division between them at this point. And this is the Lord, remember, this is the Lord talking to Israel. Let her put away her harlotries from her sight and her adulteries from between her breasts. Do you remember that phrase when we studied the two sisters in Ezekiel? That there were adulteries in their breasts that they had turned over to their lovers. Do you remember? Lest I strip her naked and expose her as in the day she was born, and make her like a wilderness, and set her like a dry land, and slay her with thirst. I will not have mercy on her children, for they are the children of harlotry. For their mother has played the harlot. She who conceived them has behaved shamefully. For she said, I will go after my lovers, who give me my bread and my water, my wool and my linen, my oil and my drink. You know, as I was reading this, I was remembering, I think it's back in Ezekiel 23. Let me look back just a minute. This was about Jerusalem. But do you remember that these things, the Lord had provided these things for her. Let me see if I can find that. I may have to come back with that after break. Yeah, is that what I'm looking for? Let me come back to that statement, because there's a place where God says that he was the one who made her beautiful and yet she deserted him anyway. But you know, the things that she's gone after. Let's look back at our scriptures here just a minute before I got off track. For she said, I'm in verse 5 of chapter 2, I will go after my lovers who give me my bread and my water, my wool and my linen, my oil and my drink. And I was thinking about All of these things that she went after were tangible things, weren't they? This is why she said she was leaving. Think of the reasons that Israel, I mean, think of the alliances that Israel thought it needed to make, she needed to make with other nations to have the things that they had. And in order to have those alliances or those connections, which were unfulfilling anyway, she was willing to take into her bosom the gods of those other nations. It's like they, you know, she went after things that couldn't satisfy anyway and that God had provided in the first place. All of these things were part of her provision as a wife. And yet she looked to other sources. And I was thinking about this statement today. This is just kind of the way it came. You know, is God my first resource? Or is He our last resort? And that's just kind of the way I was thinking about it. Do we go to Him after we've tried every other source and found them to fail? Or is He the one we go to in the first place? Because He wants to be the one we run to, not the one we crawl to when it's all said and done and we can hardly stand on our feet. He wants us to run to Him as soon as we need something. As soon as we need anything, we need Him. And He's the source of all of it. So I was thinking how foolish we are when we go away in our hearts after other things, thinking that those things will satisfy us and finding that they never do. And then we come crawling back in a state of devastation, as Gomer will be when she's gone to her lovers. And there was no need for that in the first place, because all God wants is to love us. And for us to, you know, to enjoy the benefits that await in Him. It's like He says, just come to me, will you? Don't make me your last resort after you're whipped down and beat half to death and in bondage to your sin. But if that's the way you choose to go, I'll still buy you back. I have bought you back. I'll redeem you. I have redeemed you. But I wish you wouldn't choose that route, because it's so unnecessary. So let's make the Lord our first recourse, our first resource, the one we run to first, not our last resort. Have you ever had anybody say, or have you ever even said, well, the only thing I know to do is pray, or all I can do is pray? Well, think about what we're saying. I guess the last thing that I can offer is just communication with the God of the universe. That's the best thing you can do. That's right. Think about who loves you. Think about who loves us. It's a one-sided love affair, but He loves us with all His heart. How could we not return? How can we not return that love? So here's what is said. Chapter 2, verse 6. Therefore, behold, I will hedge up your way with thorns and wall her in so that she cannot find her path. I'll frustrate her efforts, is what it said here. She will chase her lovers, but not overtake them. She won't be satisfied. Yes, she will seek them, but not find them. Nothing will satisfy her but me, says the Lord. I'll see to that. Then she will say, I will go and return to my first husband, for then it was better for me than now. For she did not know that I gave her grain, new wine, and oil, and multiplied her silver and her gold, which they prepared for Baal. God saying, I had provided it all for her all along. She didn't know what she had. Excuse me. She didn't know what she had when she had me. Therefore, I will return and take away my grain in its time, verse 9, and my new wine in its season, and will take back my wool and my linen. The provision that I had made, I'll withdraw it for a season, And all of that was given to cover her nakedness, but I'll leave her naked. And then she'll see. Now I will uncover her lewdness in the sight of her lovers, and no one shall deliver her from my hand. I will also cause all her mirth or joy to cease, her feast days, her new moons, her Sabbaths, all her appointed feasts, all of her celebrations. And I will destroy her vines and her fig trees, of which she has said, these are my wages that my lovers have given me. You see, we often give outsiders the credit for the things that the Lord has done for us. Who is our provider? He is. Everything that we have and everything that we need is in Him. And yet, so often, you know, we can look at this woman and say, what a fool. But we can also look at ourselves sometimes and say, what a fool. I don't even realize sometimes all that I have from Him that He's already done for me. And that everything that I could possibly need is all provided in Him. And yet we go in other directions seeking those things that we already have, because God is good and He's our provider. And He has made provision ahead of time for all that we need. So I will make them a forest. I'm in verse 12. And the beasts of the field shall eat them. I will punish her for the days of the Baals to which she burned incense. And what are we talking about here? Spiritual adultery or idol worship, worshiping other gods, whoredom, it's all, you know, it's all compared to adultery. She decked herself with her earrings and jewels. Her jewelry, and went after her lovers. Now, this is the scripture that I was thinking about earlier. There's a place, and I'll find it during break, where God is talking about the city of Jerusalem, and He said, you know, I took her in the state she was in, and I gave her a gift, and I made her beautiful, and she was mine. And I did these things for her, and then she turned her heart from me, and she took all the beauty that I had given her, and she moved toward other lovers with it. That's exactly what He says. And this is the same kind of image here. She decked herself with her earrings and her jewelry and went after her lovers. But me, she forgot, says the Lord. So in similar ways to what Gomer did to Hosea, so Israel did to her love, the Lord. Therefore, behold, now He's already said, I will turn from her, I'll take things away, I'll show her her situation, I'll show her her own nakedness, I'll punish her. But look what happens in verse 14. Therefore, behold, I will allure her, or draw her back. I'll bring her into the wilderness and speak, not condemnation. What does He say here? I'll speak comfort to her. I will win her back. Now, you talk about a love. I mean, would you? If you were betrayed this way, would you want to take them back? You know, our attitude is often, you do me wrong, I do you wrong. You hurt me, you haven't hurt me near the way I'm going to hurt you. But that's not God's attitude. He says, you do me wrong, you choose your path, you suffer. Because sin has consequences. That's just my word. That's the way it is. But I love you anyway. And I'll make a way so that when you see where you are and when you've hurt yourself bad enough, you'll come back to me and you will let me speak words of comfort to you by my word and my spirit, and I will make you whole again. That's what I'll do. Because I love you. Never mind what you did. Never mind where you went. Never mind who you went with. Never mind all that. Just come home. And you know that's His heart cry to every one of us still. We miss it. Who hadn't missed it? Not one of us has any business being critical of anybody. I mean, you know, we've got people outside the covenant that we can look at and condemn, but God doesn't even do that. Jesus said, I didn't come to condemn anybody. And he's really the only one who ever could have. But they don't even know God. We do. I mean, we know who he is. We know how he loves. We know that everything that we'll ever need is in him. We know that. And still, I mean, who's the real fool here? They go astray not knowing lots of times. We go astray and we do know him. And we know how he loves us. We know all that he is, as much, you know, by as much word as we have in us. And so I ask you who the real fools are. The ones who go ignorantly or the ones who go knowing. And still he says, I know. I know you and I know what you're going to do and I love you anyway. Come back to me. And that's what alluring means. It's almost like a courtship. It's like he goes after the very one who's hurting because he loves her. And that's exactly what Hosea does for Gomer, and it's exactly what God does for us. It's what God does for Israel. It's what God does for us. So there are three levels that we can look at this. The man and his wife, the Lord and his nation, and Jesus and us. It's a one-sided love affair. But aren't we blessed to be the recipients of that kind of unconditional love that says no matter how far you go, no matter how far you take yourself away from me, I will love you back into my arms so I can comfort you and make you whole again and reclothe you and put you back on your feet again and restore you to wholeness because I love you. That's the heart of God. And it's seen so clearly here, so passionately here, in what Hosea does. So, is my time up? All right, on tape it is. So we'll take a little bit of an early break, and then we'll come back at like five after. Okay? Thank you. That's a pretty good...